Hello, friends, and welcome to Hello, Friend. My name is Bethany Rutter, and today's friend is Alice Slater. Alice is extraordinary in many ways. She was a Vine superstar before Vine tragically met its end. She is wonderful at recommending books on Twitter. She is an extraordinary author, and that's why I wanted to chat to her today. But first of all, how do we know each other?
Well, we met in 2009 on the now almost defunct platform LiveJournal.
We can talk more about LiveJournal because I feel like we both will have a lot to say about that.
It's important. It was an important platform. But we met for the first time in Meatspace at Primavera in 2011.
IRL, not URL. We did. We met at Primavera 2011. We were there separately and we managed to coordinate to hang out in person.
In that kind of weird concrete sunbox that is Spanish festivals.
Yeah.
It was quite
unforgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So your thing on Twitter has become book recommendations. You are someone that people follow specifically because you are very knowledgeable about books. Tell us why you know so much about books.
Well, I'm a bookseller. So I started working for Waterstones. My first job was in 2009 in the Manchester Deansgate store.
So 2009 was a very big year for you.
Yeah, man, that's when
you started
it was life changing.
Started working for Waterstones, first started following me on LiveJournal. It was
so
all happening.
I quit that job pretty quickly to go and do an MA in creative writing. I did that, chased my dreams, and then came back to bookselling to the Walthamstow store. And I've been hopping around different shops ever since.
And you are now the bookselling queen of the first floor at Waterstones Gower Street.
Yeah, I'm captain of the fiction and children's ship.
Cool. So if people want to get a recommendation for you in real life, they maybe could come find you at work?
Absolutely.
That wouldn't be weird. Yeah.
No, not at all. It happens not all the time, but quite regularly. Like someone will make themselves known to me, like, oh, I follow you on Twitter. That's always the most exciting thing.
Yeah, because I feel like people often are very embarrassed to go out to people that they know online, but who do not know them, maybe. But I, for one, I don't know about you, but I am always very happy when that happens. I'm never like annoyed. I never want them to feel like bad or weird about it.
The thing is, I actually really appreciate it because I'm really not very good at recognizing people from their little avatars.
Yeah,
so
some
if someone doesn't
even
say something to me, I don't know. I don't recognize them.
But you're like, when someone's like, I follow you on Twitter, I think you're really cool, you're never like, oh, that's a weird thing to say.
Oh, Jesus, no, I bask in it.
Yeah, me too.
I think the thing is, though, that with bookselling, like, I'm in a customer-facing role. So I'm already, hopefully, showing myself as someone who's really approachable because I'm saying hello to every single customer. Like, I'm going to say hello to you first.
It's true. So, and they have an excuse to talk to you.
Yeah.
Back to LiveJournal.
Oh,
that
so
was the best
goes.
Place in the world, wasn't it?
I think LiveJournal was, I mean, it breaks my heart that it's gone. I know it's not gone, but it's gone.
It's been taken over by Russian spam bots.
Yeah, like it's not a place that people, like young people go to anymore. And it was amazing writing practice. It was therapeutic. It was interesting to learn about different people and the way that they live and what they're doing. It was a great way to get to know people as well.
I totally agree. It was like, whenever I mention LiveJournal to someone who doesn't know what it is, and I often do have to mention LiveJournal because people will say, how do you know this person? I'll have to say, we met on LiveJournal. And they're like, oh, what's that? The way that I describe it to people is thus. It was like the perfect mix of Twitter and blogs before blogs existed, in that you could choose whether your account was like locked or open. So you could choose who followed you and who you followed. But there were like more specific communities around which people could gather and like meet each other. But it was essentially like an online diary, right?
And that's, yeah, I think also there was a level of privacy that you don't get on social media at all now. So I knew your real name. I knew who you were, but we didn't have each other added on any other platform.
Yeah, it's true.
It was only LiveJournal. And for like, I never had my real name on there. I never had my real photograph. No one did. That was kind
of
weird.
Yeah, you're right.
And at the same time, like no one, you couldn't really track unless you were going to proper like be a little detective about it. You couldn't like track what people were doing. So you could be massively active in like an anime community, but also be really deep into a makeup community. And that doesn't like, that wouldn't create like a conflicting brand, because you weren't a brand. It was just a space that you were hanging out in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. And that was really my first encounter with like being a person on the internet, like being an outward facing internet user rather than just using the internet for, I don't even know what I would use the internet for when I was like 15. But yeah, it was the first place that I got used to kind of talking about my life online. And I think there is something in the fact that, here is an observation that I've made over the last few years, a lot of the biggest bloggers in both the plus size and non-plus size spaces were early adopters because they had been semi-major players in LiveJournal shopping communities.
Yep, 100%.
Yep. There are people that I still recognize from the high street who have gone on to become like bloggers, like Wish Wish Wish, Carrie.
Yeah, yeah.
She was on in this community that I was in with a lot of my friends called the High Street. And so I feel like we got used to taking pictures of things that we'd bought and talking about them online. And that was early blogging. LiveJournal has given us so much.
It was the gift that kept on giving for a long time. And
now it's
gone. I miss it every day.
Yeah.
And I really do. Because it was writing practice. That's how I feel like I really cut my teeth in telling a narrative, because I would always be aware of the fact that if I was going to tell a story about an incident that had happened, I knew that the people who followed me didn't necessarily read every blog post that I wrote. So I would give the people in my life very recognizable, memorable nicknames.
That was your thing.
That was my thing.
That was one of your things, was like people in your life had nicknames, that some of which I still remember, which I will not list now, but I do still remember.
Good, name one.
Tiny Dancer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's one.
So they were all nice, like they're people that I love, but I knew that that way people would remember these characters.
Yeah.
And the chronology of a story, what information do you actually need for this story to make sense?
That's so wild that like, because for me, reading your live journal was such a satisfying experience, because it wasn't just reading what someone had been up to. You just wrote it in such a engaging, literally literary way that it was such a different experience from reading anyone else's live journal. So the fact that you were consciously using it as writing practice is not that surprising. It was just so much better than everyone else's. And I bet anyone that followed you, maybe some of whom are listening right now, would agree. From one great passion, LiveJournal, to another great passion, which is books. I would like you to talk me through a few books that you are really excited about, either that have already come out or that are soon to come out, that you think could make great holiday reading, whatever that means to you.
Okay. So the first book that I would want to talk about is one that I literally just read. And as I was compiling a list of like my top 10 books of the year, I was like, nothing. I couldn't imagine anything else would make it into this list because it's been such a solid year in publishing. But I just read a book called Exquisite by Sarah Stovall, which is a thriller. It's an obsessive love story with a kind of who's lying aspect to it. So I would describe it as like the obsession of I Love Dick with the relationship of Carol, but the doubt of Gone Girl.
Those are three books, two of which I would put in my top five, one of which I thoroughly enjoyed. So I am literally 100% sold on this book, and I'm going to read it post haste. And it's out already, right?
Yeah. So mostly I do keep up with, you know, what's coming out. I get a lot of proofs. I see a lot of books. I read a lot of books months before they come into the bookshop. This one just arrived in a box of new fiction. I put it out on the table and was like, oh, Erin Kelly's name is on the cover. Erin Kelly being the author who wrote my all-time favorite book, The Poison Tree. And then I realized that Erin had actually recommended this book to me already. So I picked it up and bought it. But it could have slipped me by. So I want to make sure no one else misses it.
And that is exactly why I'm doing this, because I feel like the world deserves your recommendations.
Oh, stop it.
Another one?
Okay. I'm just thinking. So when we talk about holiday reading, what I want from a holiday read is something that I can sit by the pool and read for 4 hours and without a care in the world. So I think about books that are incredibly compelling, that I can't put down. Another one that I would put in that category that's come out recently would be Conversations with Friends by Sally Rooney.
I love that book.
What a cracker.
Yeah, and I really like her as a person. Like, I follow Sally Rooney on Twitter, and I feel like she's someone that I could know anyway. Like, she fits so neatly into, like, my world. I know that's probably a weird thing to say about someone that I don't know who has written this really cool book, but I was just like, I like you as a concept, and I also like you as an actual person. And I love that book.
I think, so I really love, I love books about female relationships. I love
Which is what this
women.
Book is. So yeah. Conversations with Friends is...
So it's two young women in their like early to mid 20s, early 20s, who write and perform poetry together. They're exes, but they've remained friends despite the kind of breakdown of their romantic relationship. And they meet this journalist who's interested in writing a profile about their work. The journalist is married, and they each become obsessed with one member of this couple. I love books about young women who don't know what the fuck they're doing, yep. don't know where they're going, are making bad decisions or making good decisions, but about bad people. And this book just fits into that category. Books like Paulina and Fran, books like...
Marlena. Which maybe we'll come to.
Which we will come to. but also books like Cat's Eye by Margaret Atwood. Have you ever read that?
I haven't. I've only read The Handmaid's Tale. Oh, wait. What else did Margaret Atwood write? I'm going to edit this bit out. But,
so sure, like the Oryx and Crake trilogy.
Yeah. I read one of those because I was banging someone that was really into them and I wanted him to fancy me more. But I didn't really like it.
I feel like we could do a whole podcast just on books I've read so that other people would like me or think I was cool.
This guy that I was banging wasn't even that great. Like, I shouldn't have been doing anything to impress him, let alone reading books that I wasn't really into. Why do we do this to ourselves?
I know. And you know, I feel like if I could give my younger self any advice, it would be don't read them, just say you have.
Oh my God, I should have done that.
What's the difference? At the end of the day, and you're like, still going to be saying bullshit about it.
Yeah. And the people that you really, you won't regret having any kind of relationship with are people that you either have read the same stuff as or you haven't and you don't lie about it.
Yeah. Which, you know, can I tell you my confession? So the most popular book that people claim to have read but haven't is 1984. Okay.
I have not read that.
Okay.
Oh, no, wait. I've read a lot of it. I've never finished reading it. I saw the play because someone that I fancied said it was good.
That old chestnut.
And then I went to see it and I hated it. So... yeah, 1984 can at least partially fuck off.
The thing with 1984, though, is that like, it is a really good book and it's really easy to read. It's like, why lie about it? Just read it.
Yeah,
just read it.
Like, I should have read it.
It's not that hard. But a book that is really hard to read, but that I consistently lied about reading for like a long time, I got deep in, was On the Road by Jack Kerouac.
I have not read that.
So when I was 15 years old and I decided I wanted to be a writer, a teacher was like, you should read this book. It's called On the Road. So I went to Waterstones in Camden and bought it. And I tried to read the first page and I just couldn't read it at all. But being a teenager, I didn't feel like I could just say I didn't read it. I couldn't do it. So I just told him that I did. And he was like, you did? God, that's really impressive. That's really cool. I was
and like, then
yeah,
you were in too
you.
Deep.
But then my mom found out. My mom was like, oh, that's amazing. Then, you know, there's all these other books you should read. And dude, it went on for years. Like the scroll that he wrote the whole book on one piece of paper, just taping it together through his typewriter. It came to Birmingham and I was at uni in Crewe. My mom took me, the whole family came. They bought me a poster. I didn't know what to do. I framed the poster. I had it on my wall for years. I've never read that book. And only now I'm at a place where I can say, I haven't read it and I never will.
I'm really happy that you can make that admission on the record.
Yeah, that's true. That's very official now.
That's a very deep lie that went on for a very long time. And I feel honoured to be part of the truth-telling. So,
okay,
conversations
sorry,
with friends.
That was a tangent we did not need.
No, this is good shit.
I just felt like I needed to get that off my chest. Okay, so conversations with friends. And then we both mentioned Marlena.
Yes, by Julie Bunton.
Oh my God. So that is coming out June the 15th in the UK. It's already out in America. It's coming out, this month, next month. It depends when this goes live.
It will go live in the month of June.
It's out June 15th.
Yes.
It's out June 15th. And again, so that's another book about young women making mistakes. In this book, however, they're much younger. And like a lot of adult fiction about teenagers, it's a kind of reflexive reflective.
I never know. It looks backwards.
Do they both work? Yeah, it looks back on her teenage years, the narrator's teenage years, where she moved to a very kind of quite destitute rural town and ends up in this kind of very intense friendship with a young woman who is very troubled. We know from the very beginning of the book that the young woman in question died that summer. So it's kind of going back and forth as to kind of how that happened and what happened.
But it's again, very good.
Just a great absorbing summer read.
I think I know a lot of people that would like that book. Mm-hmm. You know what I like? Mm. I like books where the title is one word and the word is a woman's name.
Eileen.
Rebecca. Marlena. End of list.
I know. I was like, I want to keep going. I can't think of another
one. I was literally only thinking of those three. But three is enough to make a trend.
Yeah.
Any other books you'd like to advocate for?
The End We Start From.
Oh, what a banger. That is a tiny banger.
Yeah, that is like, you know, when it's a really beautiful sunny day, you have nowhere to be and you just want to like sit in the garden or in a beer garden with like a nice glass of wine or delicious pint of cider and just read something great. That is the book to do that with.
The End We Start From by Megan Hunter. Yeah, just wanted to get that on the record.
We said that together.
We did.
That one I would just, so it's post-apocalyptic, but set in the very near future during this disaster in which London is flooded and destroyed. It's narrated by a woman who is 9 months pregnant when this happens. And it's written in almost like vignettes. It's written in these tiny little snatches. So it's not in any way poetry, but it has that kind of verse
prose poetry
feel to it.
Thing, yeah.
So I would say it's like The Road meets Grief Is a Thing with Feathers, yep, if they were both from a more female perspective and about motherhood rather than death.
I would totally agree with that review. And I really stand by that book.
And it's a gorgeous book as well. Like as a thing, it's a beautiful little hardback with a stunning cover.
Agree. They've done a really good job of that. So since you're a bookselling pro, something that I'd like to talk to you about, which is something that I've seen you talk about, but, you know, I want to give you a chance to expand, elaborate, etc., which is the art of bookselling. How has that been impacted by social media? You talked very interestingly about this on Twitter, about people asking you for books that you couldn't understand why they wanted them, and then you found out why.
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I think certainly in terms of young adult fiction, I think that's the area where I personally have really seen social media make an impact. The two books that I would say started that trend as far as I was concerned was, first of all, lesser known Diary of an Oxygen Thief, which is the book that I triggered this blog post that I wrote, inspired the blog post that I wrote about that. The second one was more obviously Milk and Honey.
Yep.
Diary of an Oxygen Thief, it was just one photograph of the first page. And the first line of that book is, I liked hurting girls. That is not necessarily like representative of the book. The book itself is actually quite kind of Bukowskian. It's about a just gross, misogynistic man who is disgusting. And he writes this horrible book about how gross he is. Milk and Honey, however, is...
Because, yeah, I've never seen a book shared as widely on social media as Milk and Honey. I've literally never seen it.
But so broadly as well.
Yeah.
Because in terms of poetry, customers who are coming in and buying Milk and Honey are not then buying the new Emily Berry or the new Kate Tempest. Like, it's... They're buying it because they've seen it online, and they're more likely to be going to the vlogging section or the young adult section than they are the poetry section. So I find that quite exciting. Like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is... For some teenagers, this will be the first poetry that they have read for pleasure. And why not start?
It's like a boundary smashing concept.
Yeah,
like,
and why not start with something that talks about issues that maybe they're not actually having conversations with, like consent, like abuse, like heartbreak, like sex.
Yeah, this is like the ideal gateway drug for so many things.
And it's happening on social media. It's not happening in classrooms. It's not happening around adults. It's being quite kind of uncensored in a way that I think is really positive.
Bless social media.
Oh, God, love it.
Yeah, that's a really big thing. Like, I thought it was really interesting that you would have a couple of people asking for Diary of an Oxygen Thief and not really be able to account for, like, why they wanted it or, like,
so
where they'd
was,
heard of it.
It was dozens of teenagers asking for it.
In person, in real life?
In person, coming into the shop. At the time, I was working in a really small branch of Waterstones in Ilford. We didn't have a massive young adult section. It wasn't the kind of book. It's not a young adult book anyway. It's not the kind of book we would have sold there. But as you do, the first person who asked for it, I did some research. Like, it's not actually available in the UK. It came out in 2006.
Is it Dutch? No, where's
it's
it
not Dutch, but it was published in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And like, I think it was like a small independent press. And it was a, quite a cult hit.
Who wrote it? I know that it's semi-anonymous.
No, totally anonymous. As far as I'm aware, whoever the author is, he now has a second book out as well, the name of which completely escapes me. But he has never been revealed who he is because he's apparently a big honcho in the advertising industry. That could be total bullshit. There is no way to prove either way.
So Don Draper wrote Diary of an Oxygen
Yeah,
Thief,
I think it was Don Draper.
It was John Hamm with his big dick.
But someone else, another publisher, a publisher picked it up and reissued it last year. And yeah, all these teenagers got really interested in this first page, but weirdly, none of them bought it. It was really hard for us to get hold of at first because it hadn't come out. By the time it came out, I'd moved to Gower Street, which is a much kind of trendier shop. It has a lot more of an emphasis on kind of cool cult fiction.
Yep.
And there it was like flying out the door, but it was students who were buying it.
Okay. So I would like to talk to you about your greatest passion. Instead of saving it for one of my final questions where I do a little quick fire round, instead of asking you what is your favorite book, we're going to talk about it now because I had known you for a very long time. By the time I read the book that you had been trying to get me to read the whole time we'd known each other. I only read it last summer, The Poison Tree.
The Poison Tree.
By Erin Kelly.
Ms. Erin Kelly.
Talk to me about your great passion, The Poison Tree.
Okay, so The Poison Tree. That's so funny because actually my story about The Poison Tree is exactly the same as the one you just told. My mom read it. My mom was like, Alice, you're going to love this book. I'm going to put it right here in your bedroom. I wasn't living at home at the time, so I was like, cool, mom, I'll definitely remember to pick that up. And then it was like one long hot summer and I just read something that has this sounds so stupid, something that has like a similar cover. I can't remember what it was, something that was really leafy. And when I put it on the shelf, I was like, oh, they look like matchy-matchy. So I picked up The Poison Tree. And I remember starting it and just completely falling into it. And it has remained my favorite book of all time. It's about a young woman who falls into a kind of obsessive friendship with this kind of very cool bohemian drama student. It's set in a 1990s summer heat wave in this beautiful crumbling house in Highgate. From the very beginning, you know that someone's done a murder, but you don't know who's died. You don't know who did it. You just know that someone ended up in prison. So the book is checkerboarded between the past and present as she kind of goes back to this kind of summer and where it all happened. It is just so good. Everyone that I have ever lent that book to has loved it. There's also just so much to talk about. Like when my best pal Nisha finished it, we stayed up till 4 a.m. in my garden, just drinking and smoking and talking about the characters in that book.
And Erin Kelly is legitimately extremely wonderful.
And in fact, you know what? I have massive regret. When we were listing our summer recommendations, he said, she said, her new book should probably be on that list.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, it is such a banger. It kind of taps into that kind of bohemian world. This time it's Eclipse Chasers, which I did not know that that went so deep.
I didn't know that was a thing.
People, they follow eclipses around the world. That's what they spend all their money on. And I think that's amazing. Kind of wild.
For the avoidance of doubt, the word that we keep saying is eclipse, because I would not have picked that up because it's just such a weird thing to chase.
Yeah, Eclipse Chasers.
Yeah, and with He Said, She Said, I like there to be a book around that whenever someone says, what book should I read? I can just go straight to that. And for me at the moment, that's the book that when people are like, oh, not sure what I'm going to read next, I'm like, have you read He Said, She Said? Because I just loved it. And I was a bit worried about it because obviously the title is quite provocative. Mm-hmm. especially given that it's about a rape trial.
Yeah.
I was really nervous about how it was going to play out, and it totally exceeded my expectations in every single way.
It's so meticulously plotted.
Oh, she's so clever.
She is so clever.
I'd genuinely love to be as clever as her. I'm hoping at some point in either this season or next season of Hello Friend, I would love to talk to someone who writes thrillers, maybe Erin Kelly herself, if her schedule permits, because I just am not clever enough to write a thriller. Like, I cannot, my brain doesn't work that way. Do you think you could write a thriller? I'm not saying that if you couldn't, you are not clever, but do you think your brain works in the thriller way?
Well, I mean, it feels, oh God, it would feel so arrogant after you said all that to lean forward and be like, yes, Bethany,
if anyone could, it's you.
But I mean, but that's what I was writing. I did a creative writing MA and I was working on a thriller. The problem that I had with my thriller is that I outgrew it. I was writing it very young and I spent too long on it. I got really stuck on it. And it would have worked if I had written it quicker.
Yeah.
But by the time I was finished my MA, it was too much work to make it work. Maybe I'll finish it one day.
I'm just such a naive reader of thrillers that, like, it doesn't matter how many I read, and Lord knows I read a lot, I always want to be surprised. Like, I'm always reading them without ever really guessing what's going to happen. And if I can guess, I'm such a naive reader that it probably means that it is not very well written, because I can never guess. I can never guess what's going to happen. And it's just so satisfying.
See, I don't even care if I guess or not, because you never know until you finish the book that if you were right.
Yeah.
So, like, I couldn't care less about guessing. And I feel like the best kind of thriller for me is where the characterization is so on point that nothing the characters do actually surprises me, because it's like, yeah, of course she would do that. Yeah. Of course he's going to say that. You know, like, none of their behaviors are a shock because they make sense.
Yeah.
But they still do wild things that leave me gagging.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what Exquisite does. Oh my God.
I can't wait to read it. Alice gave it to me on the tube here, and I have quite a lot to read at the moment. Both for practical reasons and also my own enjoyment, but that is going straight to the top of my list when I am at liberty to read what I want.
And you've read Erin Kelly's other book? Burning Air is the other one that's a real standout for me.
I love that book.
But don't read that over summer. What a waste. Save that one and read it in the autumn.
That's exactly when I read it. I took some time off work last autumn to work on a creative project that I'm still not at liberty to discuss.
Oh my God.
You know what it is.
I know what it is.
But I read The Burning Air while I was working on this thing, and I read it so quickly, and it was exactly the time of year that The Burning Air takes place, and it was so satisfying because I was like, yes, I feel it. I feel the chill in the air. I see the golden crunchy leaves. And it's just a great book. I prefer that to The Poison Tree, and I know that you do the same face every time.
Every time I do this little face, it's like, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's like me and Alice's big point of difference. The biggest point of difference between us is that I think I prefer The Burning Air and you prefer The Poison Tree.
I respect that.
No, you don't.
I do. Of course I respect it. I think The Burning Air has, I think, a much more, Erin Kelly would not mind me saying this, a much more sophisticated plotting. It is, I don't even understand how she plotted that book.
It is fiendish.
But I know how she ended up writing it, and I'm not going to tell you because I think you should get her on Hello Friend and then she can tell you herself. But she did write it a very different way to her two previous books. And I think that's really interesting. She really pulled something special out of the bag with that one. But The Poison Tree, the reason why The Poison Tree is my favorite, I think, is because it evokes a lot of stuff that I really love. Like, the female friendship aspect is just perfect for me. But also just the 90s setting, her use of language.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. It's the perfect book.
It's a great book. So yeah, the three Erin Kelly books that we have just discussed in semi-detail are The Poison Tree, The Burning Air, and He Said, She Said, all of which Alice and I would strongly recommend.
Seal of approval.
Because there are a lot of bad thrillers around. And I feel bad, like, when I have to talk about things that I haven't enjoyed. But I really feel like post Gone Girl, we are living in an age where thrillers get written and they are just mediocre. And what have you observed in terms of like publishing trends on the bookselling floor? Do you think that the post Gone Girl wave of like female written thrillers has crested and we are now witnessing a decline because they were bad and did not sell well?
No.
We're still in the golden age.
No.
Tell me.
No. So Gone Girl was 2012.
Yep.
Right? 2012 was also the year that The Paperwhite was released.
I got a Paperwhite.
There you go. Yeah. So 2012 was a difficult year for physical books, but
the Kindle Paperwhite, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, the Kindle Paperwhite. But Gone Girl came out that year. If I remember correctly, I might be thinking of 2012. Gone Girl and 50 Shades of Grey were the kind of two books that completely saved bookshops. And they were both exciting in different ways. Gone Girl, obviously, we know in terms of thrillers, like a lot of books piggybacked on that. Like there was a period of time that every single freaking book would be compared to Gone Girl, to the point where they literally were using Gone Girl as just synonymous with gripping.
Yep.
So
yeah.
So books that actually didn't resemble Gone Girl at all would be compared to Gone Girl, and it just kind of became meaningless. But then The Girl on the Train happened, and I think that that is the crest that we need to discuss. Because Gone Girl didn't actually change the face of the kind of crime thriller writing, as far as I'm concerned. Like, it got loads of people reading them, and I'm sure that more came out. Suddenly, there was a lot of darker covers, because Gone Girl has, like, just the black cover with the orange letters.
It does.
Like, really simple, really kind of... It's not even iconic, just really, really simple.
Yep.
So we kind of had a lot of books that looked the same, just black with a bright color on them. That's what publishing does. The Girl on the Train was the game changer because, again, much like Gone Girl, you had this incredibly simple premise. Woman on train sees a thing and then a thriller happens.
Yep.
Which is kind of mind-blowing because obviously you just think, well, how the fuck did that happen? But that book stayed in hardback for 15 months.
That's wild.
Like, completely wild. Completely wild. I think that's the book that has then led to... kind of flooding the market with psychological thrillers that have been renamed domestic noirs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, which I think has such a kind of, it's adding a female spin to it.
Yeah.
Psychological thriller is a perfectly good description, but the domestic noir was born. And that's where I found, like, I can't trust just because a book is piled high on a table or is, like, falling out of supermarket shelves doesn't necessarily mean it's going to tick my boxes. So yeah. I've had to be a lot less frivolous with how many thrillers I read because...
Yes, I would totally agree. Yeah, I feel like there was a time where if I read a thriller, I could be reasonably sure that it would be thrilling and it would be good.
Yeah.
And post Girl on the Train, I no longer trust in that world. I've been burnt too many times. And sometimes it's not even a real burning. It's just like a real disappointment. I compare the world of thrillers to my experiences of online dating.
Oh, here we go.
The best one is a good one. Like, what you really want is to read a good thriller. Like, you really want to have a good date.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you read a thriller that is so bad, it's really funny. Like, one that we discussed at your cheese party, where I had to describe the ending because it's just so shockingly bad.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't sure if you'd quite a date or a thriller there. Now I remember.
A thriller.
Yeah.
And it's the same with dates. Like, sometimes a date is so bad, at least you can walk away from it and be like, at least it gives me a good story. At least it gives me something to talk about at the cheese party. The worst kind of date and the worst kind of thriller is where you finish it and you're like, that wasted my time. I have no good stories. I experience no thrills. I hate it. That is, like, my worst nightmare, is to feel disappointed by a thriller. I either want to be, like, so titillated by it that I want to tell everyone to read it, or so incensed at how ridiculous it was that I want to tell people about it anyway. And I feel like there are so many that fall so squarely in the middle now where it's just like, eh.
And I think that's the thing. Like, I don't read as many thrillers now, which makes me feel sad because I love them. And I like to be able to recommend some really solid, strong books. But I think what I find really frustrating is also just the writing's quality. that is so important to me that I want to completely believe that world. I want to believe those characters. I want to worry for them. I want to be in the place that they're in. And I want, that's for me where like the thrill comes from. And I think although I could sit here right now and name dozens of books that do that really well, I now it's harder to know whether or not something's going to do that or if it's just got a twisty plot. And some people love books that have twisty plots, and that's fine. I'm glad that those books exist for those readers, but I'm not one of them.
I feel like a lot of the thrillers that are around now are like the anti-Patricia Highsmith, in that her writing is so good and so thrilling and tense that even when she wrote Carol, which is not a thriller, it had the pace of a thriller, and you cannot take that away from her writing. Like, you can never escape like the flawlessness of her like momentum and tension, and also like these beautiful worlds that you really know exactly where you are. And so many now are just like really high concept thrillers with like no payoff in terms of the reading experience.
I think it must be, it's like a gift to have a book that has like The Girl on the Train, like a way you can nutshell it really easily. But some books you just can't, and some books the kind of nutshell description just sounds maybe a little bit lackluster or unoriginal. And sometimes that's okay if the book can hold its own. Too often I find that a book is released because it's high concept, you won't believe the ending. Those promises are not enough. You have to deliver if you're going to make that kind of promise.
What Alice is saying, she knows very well, relates so strongly to the book that I was just speaking about in veiled terms that I talked about at the cheese party, which was really pushed on social media because of its ending. And I now realize that the way that that book was marketed on social media is the epitome of the expression, you cannot polish a turd, but you can roll it in glitter.
Ooh.
Where the ending is so bad that the publishers clearly realize that we can't make it a good ending, but we can really draw attention to the ending so that everyone is reading this bad book building up to the ending. And then just because the ending is like literally the silliest thing I've ever experienced in my whole life, we can get away with it because we've pointed to it so much. It is shocking. And I'm not going to name it here, but if
we're,
you would like to know, if you do want to know what book I'm talking about, just slide into my DMs because I'm happy to tell you. Okay, we have been chatting at length, and I feel like now is the time to wind this down.
Okay, I could do this forever.
Me too. We do it anyway.
I know.
I've seen Alice like a couple of times over the last few days, and it just feels like our book chat could just go on and on and on and still be productive. Quick fire questions.
Okay.
Question number one, what is a reading experience you will never forget?
So I think it would be the first book that I remember not being able to put down. And that would have been when I was like 16, 17 years old. My mom had just moved to Walthamstow. And I remember sitting in her garden, and she had, it was one of the Warner flats. So it was like one of those long, thin gardens.
Which is what I live in now.
Exactly. And she had given me Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. It was the first time I read it. I remember it was spring, and so it had rained, but the garden wasn't wet. I was sat on a bench, and all the beautiful plants around me were kind of rich with rainwater. And obviously that's very kind of evocative of the book itself. I feel like it's coastal, so you have like the sea air. But I remember there's a photo of me somewhere reading that book. I read the whole thing over the weekend, sat in that garden. And
that's a great answer. I read that book shockingly late. Like, I read it last year.
There's no such thing as too late for that book, as long as you read it.
I feel like I'd wasted my life until that point. I loved it so much. Question number two, what emoji do you feel best describes you?
The little smiley ghost emoji.
Do the face now. I just want to see it. No one will be able to hear it. Yes.
or the one that looks like this.
Oh, the grimacing emoji.
Yeah, like, well, I think of it as like a, like an anxious smile.
Yeah, exactly. That's what, like, I'm stressed out, man, emoji.
Yeah, I have a photo of a dog that looks exactly like that, that I quite often send to people on WhatsApp.
Do you know what dog you use that I hate, that really upsets me?
Which one?
The one that like, the dog that's high.
The dog that's high?
There's like a picture of
you. You mean this one?
Yeah, it really freaks me out. I feel like its face is really unnatural.
I love that face so much, and I will never stop using it. And I don't care if everyone tells me, dude, we really hate it when you send us that photo.
No, I feel like most people like it. I just, there's something about its face that makes me really uncomfortable. Okay, next question. If you were to go to the shops and buy yourself some crisps, what brand and flavour would you be looking for?
Okay, I like the kind of salt and vinegar that makes your whole face, like, pucker in on itself.
Like a lemon.
Yeah, like, proper, like... So I think the best ones that I have found so far is, I think it's Tavern, the brand that has, like, the girl on the cover, and she's doing, like, a proper lemon face, and when you suck your cheeks right in, and she's going cross-eyed, those ones. I've never seen them in a corner shop, though. I only ever see them in pubs, but...
Okay, cool. That's good to know.
Those are my favourite crisps.
That's good for pub dwellers, rather than corner shop dwellers. And finally, who would you like to hear me chat to on this podcast?
Honestly, my answer was going to be Erin Kelly. I feel like we've already discussed that she would be a great addition to the show.
She's going
to
know that we love her now.
I know. She already knows that I love her. Yeah. I tell her all the time. Like a fucking weirdo. So I need an alternative answer now. Who would actually be interesting? Oh, you know who I think would be really interesting? The Twitter user Burn Your Bones.
Yes.
She has a PhD in something to do with true crime. And yeah. I think that would be such an interesting conversation.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And she's cool. She has cool hair.
I just am obsessed with her. I think she's so beautiful. She always looks wicked.
And she's a post-Live Journal person too, right?
Is she?
I don't know. I'm sure she is. I'll verify this before broadcast. But no, as far as I know, she was a Live Journaler. All the best people are.
All the most creative people are.
Except from me. Alice, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and chatting to me for this podcast. If you'd like to follow Alice on social media or on the internet in general, please give us your places that we can find you.
I am on Twitter and Instagram as @smokingtofu. That's smoking without the G. And I also have a blog, smokingtofu.co.uk.
And she can be found... IRL, not URL, at Waterstones Gower Street. How would you describe yourself for anyone who's looking for you?
The little chubby book-selling beast.
With a long ponytail.
Yeah. Well, it's usually, I like to be in the itty-bitty top-knot committee.
Which I'm wearing right now.
It's usually all piled up.
Yeah. Thank you again, Alice. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to follow HelloFriend on Twitter, I am at HelloFriend_pod. I was drawing a little at symbol in the air as I said that. You can email me anything to do with the show at HelloFriendPod@gmail.com. Please do not forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate me 5 stars if you think I'm cool. Leave a nice comment wherever you get your podcasts. That would make me feel really good. Thank you very much, and I will be back super soon with a special episode, unless something goes wrong with the recording of that episode, in which case I will be back in a week's time. See ya!